Walking the Moonlight Path by Chelsea Wakefield. Chelsea?
About 8 years ago, I had a dream that I was in a university library. I was in the Department of Psychology, and without realizing it, I wandered into the Department of Anthropology through a one-way turnstile. And I kept wanting to get back to the Department of Psychology, but there was a very cranky librarian, and he would not let me through. I didn't realize it then, but since that time, I have come to realize that dream work is much more about anthropology than it is about psychology. Psychology evaluates people according to established theories and agreed upon models of what it means to be healthy and high functioning. Anthropologists do field studies. They seek to understand other cultures by suspending value judgments and preconceived notions and discovering the meaning of that world by entering into it from the inside out. Dream work is a field study of the psyche. In our dreams, we enter into another country, experiencing that world from the inside out. If we try to interpret that culture with the same orientation that we have in waking life, we will not receive the gift of what that experience could bring us. One of the things I love about dreams is that you can travel the world without ever having to pack a bag or buy a ticket. Travel expands our horizons. In dreams, we are traveling to the archetypal realm. It is a geography of vast dimension, and things work differently there. Those of us who love pilgrimage know the wonder of entering into a liminal space where there is a chance for a new reality to break through. When we open ourselves to these kinds of experiences, we are changed by them. Dreams are nighttime pilgrimages. In dreams, we travel by the less defined light of the moon. When we are doing dream work, we are walking a moonlit path into the realm of soul. Things do not work the same in the dream realm. It is a different anthropology. Dreams speak a foreign language. They speak in the language of symbols. But more importantly, they speak in the language of archetypes. It is very important to understand that archetypes are not roles or categories. They are entire systems of energy, which motivate us in particular ways and evoke responses from the environment. We each have a personal set of archetypes that we live into, or perhaps I could say that they live us. I like to call this personal set of archetypes our inner cast of characters. Each night, our dreams play out new archetypal dramas written and produced by the psyche. These dreams evoke feelings that are not random or purposeless. We are being invited to expand our horizons. Our dreams bring us new inner characters and different storylines than the ones that we are living. If you change the archetypes you inhabit, you will change your life. People always want to know what a dream means. I am more interested in what a dream stirs. What does a dream evoke in you? How does it move you, inspire you, challenge or heal you? What archetypal energy is awakening or inviting you to change in a way that if you actually began to live from that place, it would change your life? Dreams comment on the directions we are moving. When we are moving in a direction that aligns with our essential soul print, we may dream of carpets with beautiful mandalas, rose windows with the light streaming through, sumptuous gardens and tables of plenty. These dreams speak of yes. Dreams act like the stabilizing rollers on a big ship, bringing us back to center when we list too far this way or that. They dramatize the imbalances in our lives with characters entirely opposite to us. These dream characters carry an archetypal resonance that pull us back to center or infuse us with something that we are missing. They break us out of stuck places. Dreams bring us the missing colors in an archetypal spectrum. Each of us has a range of archetypal energies we identify with as us. We also have a range of archetypal energies that are not us. We do not want to identify with those qualities or attitudes. They are frightening or offensive. We disown them, and they fall into the shadow realm. That part of the color spectrum is missing from our lives. Since the psyche is always moving us to wholeness, it will bring us these disowned foreign energies in our dreams. Although they are often strange and threatening, they are more likely just the medicine we need to move us to the next level of our journey. The psyche is saying, "You've been to England and Spain and China. Now it's time to experience Argentina or the polar ice caps or perhaps even a far-off galaxy." Once you begin to walk the moonlit path, nothing will ever be boring or ordinary again. Everything around you will take on new meaning, including many of the things that you thought you had all figured out before. Your life will become enlivened by synchronicities, those interesting experiences where the alignment of events is more than just coincidence. Even the problems and challenges of your life will take on a new sense of unfolding purpose. We move beyond the realm of problems when we are walking the moonlit path, into the realm of mystery, into the great unfolding adventure. Occasionally, we fall into the trap of dream work as a spectator sport. We hold the dream at arm's length and analyze it without ever letting the culture of the dream enter us. It's like visiting the jungles of Cambodia or India and viewing the whole thing from the inside of the tour bus. Some people treat their dreams like frogs in a science class, dissecting them and categorizing their parts: anima, animus, shadow. You can become completely intellectually fascinated by how themes of world mythology play out in dreams, but if you keep it all outside of yourself or in categories of the mind, none of this will change your life any more than going to a good movie. To really understand your dreams, you have to suspend your preconceived notions. You have to get off the tour bus and enter into the culture of the dream. Engage the people who live there. Eat the food. Come to understand that world. Dream work is the ultimate form of travel, a journey through inner space, a safari through the psyche. I engage my dream characters in a form of active imagination that I call negotiating the inner peace treaty. I begin a relationship with each character, naming them, getting to know them by exploring their archetypal energies and agendas, and discovering what gifts and invitations they are bringing me. My goal is to ultimately integrate everything the dream world is bringing me, making a place for the full spectrum of archetypal energies at the table of my life. Robert Johnson once said that we should seek to live in partnership with the unconscious rather than at its mercy or in constant warfare with it. Dream work is ultimately about individuation, the Jungian term that refers to the journey of becoming who you were born to be. Each of us has a unique soul print that resonates in a particular way and calls us to certain people, paths, and purposes. We each have a contribution to make that will heal the world. There is a restaurant in Brevard that I like to eat at, and I enjoy talking to a young waiter there. I asked him the other day if he knew what the word individuation meant. He said he did not, but he thought it had something to do with becoming an individual. Then he began to talk about dreams, and he shared a dream with me in which he thought his eyes were open, but then a second lid opened, and he could really see. "Yes," I said, "that's individuation." It is all about awakening and then awakening again. There are those who think they might dip a toe into this realm. They are often surprised because once you peek into the realm of the unconscious, a second set of lids is likely to open. The awakening can be startling as you realize that you have been asleep all this time. It can sometimes feel like a cold plunge. Pisgah Forest, where I live, is filled with waterfalls, and there is a popular place that kids of all ages like to go. It's called Sliding Rock. A 60-foot-long natural rock slide with a plunge pool at the bottom. I took my son Tommy there for the first time when he was 7. He cautiously watched about a dozen kids go down, screaming and squealing with terror and delight. He decided to venture out a little bit further, slipped, and down he headed on his belly. His eyes were bigger than saucers. Mommy! All the adults were laughing. I called out, "Just relax, you'll be fine." Down he went into that cold plunge pool. I was ready to jump in after him when he emerged with a big grin on his face. As he climbed back up, he said, "That was fun. I want to go again." There are places all along this journey of discovery that feel a bit like sliding rock. You're a little bit nervous about what you may find, and you're not really sure you want to do this. But something is beckoning you. You think you'll just venture out and take a peek, and then suddenly you are being swept along by a mysterious current into the undiscovered country. Awakening can feel like a cold plunge pool, but it can also feel like a tsunami or a volcanic eruption. The German mystic Meister Eckhart once said that the earth is a book about God. Perhaps we should let the earth teach us some lessons about the process of individuation. The earth is in constant motion. On the outside, it moves in the constellation of planets around the sun. But deep within the earth, there are all sorts of forces that we don't usually think about. We assume we are on solid ground, but we are actually floating on a series of plates atop a sea of molten magma. Even the sea floor is moving, because at the mid-ocean ridge, new crust is being pushed up and emerging from the depths of the earth. As this happens, the sea floor spreads towards the continental plates. The oldest part of the sea floor collides with the continental plates, often generating tremendous pressure that results in earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and tsunamis, like what we've seen in recent times. Eventually, the seafloor is subducted back into the molten center of the Earth, pulling bits of the crumbled continental crust with it. There it is melted and mixed and moved towards the mid-ocean ridge where it emerges as fresh crust. A very simple summary of plate tectonics. But the psyche works much like this. Our personalities and identities are like the continental plates. We think they are solid, but they are actually but a thin crust floating atop a vast movement of the unconscious. New material is constantly emerging from our depths. When this new material collides with our established ego identities, we experience all sorts of inner disturbance. As these plates put pressure on one another, our foundations rumble and crumble and shift. We dream of earthquakes and tidal waves. Sometimes the changes that take place in our lives feel like a tsunami. A place that was safe and familiar is swept away in the floodwaters of events. We experience an illness, the loss of a relationship, the derailing of a career. People have a natural longing and need for stability in their outer lives, but the individuation journey is not about stability. It is about integrating the new material that is emerging from our depths, living ever more deeply into a life aligned with our soul print. One of my favorite quotes by James Hillman says, "You have to give up the life you have in order to get the life that is waiting for you." We suffer because we cling to things that are meant to pass away. Outdated stories we tell about ourselves, models of living that no longer work, scripts written by others. We are more than the events of our lives, more than our roles and resumes, our net worth, or our notions. We suffer because we are at war with this process instead of watching what is emergent, fresh, and new. The process of deep recalibration is no small task. It can be quite terrifying at times, and that is why it helps to have what Parker Palmer calls a circle of trust, a group of people that can support us while we're in the process of deep change. Long-term dream groups often become safe harbors of this sort. We celebrate the wonder and mystery of our dreams, but we also uphold each other in the difficult parts of our journey. We don't shove easy answers at each other. We listen and respect the emergent wisdom that comes from our individual soul prints. What does an individuated person look like? Actually, there is no such thing, because there is no end point to this journey. It is much better to say we are individuating than individuated. When you walk the moonlit path, people will not always understand you. They may even think you are off the path. You may feel rather lonely and maladjusted at times when you no longer seem to be in sync with your previous peer group. We love to come to conferences like this because we can gather with people who understand us. It's an anthropology conference for travelers of the psyche, each of us visiting a different country and returning back to share our experience. Individuating people make mistakes. We get stuck. We get hijacked by our complexes. The difference is that when we're under the spell of these things, we awaken a bit sooner than we used to. When we awaken, we know the value of doing our shadow work. Joseph Campbell once said, "Where you stumble, that's where your treasure is." One of the benefits of being on the journey is the development of mercy and compassion for yourself and others. In the process of becoming conscious, you see just how unconscious you were yesterday. This brings you to the humbling realization that you are undoubtedly equally unconscious about something today. Shadow work is a serious spiritual practice, one that is actively pursued by every responsible individuating person I know. The further along on the journey, the more important it becomes, because we are pioneers and people are watching us. They are following our lead, projecting their bright shadow expectations upon us. If we take on these projections, if we ever become inflated in the belief that we have arrived or have completed our shadow work, we are in deep trouble. Fortunately, our dreams usually help us out when we are moving into these dangerous waters. As we do our work, we experience redemption. Jung once said that redemption is a separation and deliverance from an earlier condition of darkness and unconsciousness, and leads to a condition of illumination and victory over everything given. The story of our lives and the events of our lives are too small to contain the vastness of our souls. Experiences of redemption happen when suddenly all of the events of your life, even the catastrophes, feel like they have a meaning. There is a place in each of us that has never been hurt, betrayed, or violated in any way, a country in the psyche beyond the world of wounding. Dream work is filled with turning points of redemption and awakening. We call them various things: realizations, felt shifts, Jeremy Taylor's ahas, or tingle pops. It is very important that we honor these pivotal experiences. They have the potential to change the entire direction of our lives. But we are so busy that we are not taught how to assimilate them. We have miraculous breakthroughs, and then we return right back to getting our to-do list done. You have to swim upstream from an entire cultural orientation towards productivity to cultivate an attitude of reverence for moments of awakening. We need more teaching on how to integrate such moments, how to actually make them real in our waking lives. I often hear people refer to quiet times as doing nothing. But in these moments, we begin to consider how we might live differently from a new archetypal orientation. This is where the continental plates of our outdated ego identity meet the moving seafloor of the unconscious. We are surrendering to a process in which the old is being subducted, and we are being melted and mixed and made anew. This is not the stuff of the dominant culture. Dream work heals us personally and collectively. It is not just our understanding of life that has changed. The field of brain research is showing how profound experiences actually change the brain. When you have a profound dream, it is the beginning of a new neural pathway. When we revisit a healing dream, immerse ourselves in it, re-experiencing the emotions and the felt sense of that dream, we are rerouting the path that neurons fire through the brain, changing our patterns of reactivity. I had a very profound healing dream this past year. In the dream, I was crossing a graduation stage, and as I reached the woman who was handing out the diplomas, she placed a golden cord around my shoulders. At that moment, a healing light came down from the sky and filled every crack and crevice of my being like a healing balm. It began to mend every little lingering crack from a shattering experience, every wound, every betrayal. It was as if I could see an X-ray of my emotional body, and I could see the fractured places mending together into a unified wholeness. I awoke with the deepest feeling of peace I had known for a long time. No talk therapy, no cognitive reframing, just a dream that brought a holy healing light. Instead of moving on to the next night's dream, I stayed with that dream for a long time. For months, I returned to it, entering into the felt sense of being infused with that healing light. Over and over, I meditated on it. I found a golden cord and placed it on my home altar. The dream experience anchored ever more deeply into my body, and it changed the way I could sit with people who had experienced overwhelming trauma. I could listen to horrific stories from a place of peace and faith, knowing that no matter how shattered the emotional body, how severed the soul, that anyone can be healed and be made whole. This is how we heal the world. You see, dream work is not an isolated activity. We are living in a quantum universe. When we experience an emotional healing, we bring a different archetypal orientation into the world. We de-escalate the conflict and drama around us rather than adding to it. When the cracks and fissures of our being get healed, we are less fragile. We can be a non-anxious presence amidst a lot of anxious people, a healing presence amidst the wounded. I am in a long-term dream group with three other women. A couple of weeks ago, we worked a very simple dream, essentially an image, but the feeling of the dream was very powerful. We sat together and entered into the dream, quietly meditating on the image and the feeling. We did not do any symbol association. We just entered into the dream. The image was closing the door to a house we were leaving. The feeling was completion and satisfaction in a job well done. There was nothing left to do, no anxiety about the future, just a feeling of happy, fulfilled closure. In our opening check-in, each of us had commented on the sense of pressure we felt about completing our to-do lists. The meditation significantly shifted the inner state of each of us that day. We went into our day in a different state than when we began the dream work. I have returned to that felt sense of that dream several times since then, and in the midst of the many details of preparing for this conference, I have rested for a few moments in a world where everything is complete and there is nothing left to do. Dream energies can undergird your life if you will carry them into the day, returning to them, letting them infuse your being. When you bring your dream to a dream group, you bring a gift that feeds the masses. It is not just a set of images and symbols. It is an entire anthropology, a world that each person there can enter into and be changed by. Recently, I have been returning to the writings of community builder Margaret Wheatley, who believes that whatever the problems we face, community is the answer. And simply listening to one another can change the world. Dream groups change the world because we gather in this way and deeply listen to one another. We don't just listen to what's being said. We are listening to what is percolating up from the underground magma, that which has not yet entered consciousness or come into formation. We are listening each other into being. This week is like a banquet feast for the soul, a treasure chest overflowing with precious gems. You will hear many talks and go to workshops and work dreams and have dozens of deep conversations. You will come away very full, with pockets full of jewels. How will you honor and integrate these treasures when you return home so that they don't just become like a beautiful dream that fades into the morning light? I want to share with you an insight that came to me in a dream journey. In this dream, I am underwater exploring a beautiful coral reef. All around the reef, hundreds of brilliantly colored fish are darting about in an amazing display, and I am captivated and delighted by the color and motion. When my attention is drawn to an enormous clamshell resting quietly at the bottom of the ocean, I knew in the dream that the shell was for me, and I watched it open and reveal this large, luminous pearl. I gathered this pearl into my hands, and I heard a voice that said, "One luminous pearl." The wisdom of this dream has come back to me again and again. Sometimes we become overwhelmed by the bounty of what the unconscious offers us, thinking we must gather more and more, capture every little insight. It reminds me of the movies where the treasure hunters finally come upon the treasure and they begin to stuff their pockets and fill their arms, realizing they cannot possibly carry away all of the riches before them. We can actually get a form of spiritual indigestion when we try to consume too much insight at once, rather than taking the time to really assimilate a pearl of great price. We could take an important lesson from Mary, newly impregnated with the sacred child, who decides that for a while she needs to quietly ponder these things in her heart. What does it actually mean to integrate something, and how do we actually do it? To integrate means to make something a natural part of your life, part of the fabric of your being. In my Inner Peace Treaty terminology, that would mean that you have made a seat for this new energy at the table of your life. It is now a part of your archetypal color spectrum, and you can access it with creativity and consciousness. It helps to develop an archetypal perspective of living, to make it a practice to notice what archetypal energies you are inhabiting as you move through your day and as you live your life. Check in right now. Who in you is attending this conference? Is it the seeker? The kid at camp? The mystic? The lost soul? The skeptic? The rebel daughter? Or the wise man? Who is listening to this talk? Who did you leave at home in order to come? And are they pulling at you occasionally from the background? Integrations are not easy. When we change, the people around us push back. Systems do not like change. That's why we often need a circle of support when we are on this journey. Let's take an example of a woman who has devoted her life to pleasing and caring for others. Her primary archetypes might be the devoted mother and wife, perhaps a dash of saint, maybe a little martyr. She is now in midlife, kids grown, and she's starting to feel very restless. Other parts of her that have been on the back burner or undeveloped are aching to burst forth. Suddenly she wants to paint or run triathlons or start a business. But she is so unaccustomed to thinking about herself that she can't quite begin. Her dreams are filled with themes of breaking free of the constraints of life. The characters that populate her night world are free-spirited artists, fearless warriors, brazen barmaids. All these dream energies come to correct an imbalance towards selflessness and sacrificial giving. If she will begin to form a relationship with these inner characters, naming them, dialoguing with them, and welcoming them to her inner round table, they will begin to shift her archetypal orientation. We can do this a little bit at a time, kind of like those cleaning products that tell you that this product should be tried on an inconspicuous area just to see what the result might be. Some of our integrations are sudden and they're filled with upheaval, but more often it can be done gradually, pulling these new energies into your life, dialoguing with them, using creative expression, building a home altar to the emergent energies, dressing a little bit differently, experimenting with relating from that new place. All the while, our dreams will reflect the anxiety of change, the challenge to the existing world, suggestions about the next step, corrective suggestions when we list a little too far towards the opposite extreme. If you begin to dream of warriors, try moving into the yoga pose of the proud warrior every morning before you start your day. A woman I know bought herself a samurai sword. If you feel a bit plain and dream of Aphrodite, dab a little bit of that energy behind your ears and go buy yourself a dress. Wear the dress, but more importantly, pull up that archetypal energy, the Aphrodite dream, and watch what that evokes. There are an endless variety of ways that you can integrate your dream energies, but you have to carve out the time to do it. You have to honor this process. You have to make a place at the table of your inner life before you can invite a new archetype home for dinner. One dream can feed you for years. One dream image can change your life. When something moves you, when you have an awakening experience, savor it, meditate on it. Don't just go skittering on to the next beautiful thing and the next fabulous insight. Deepen these realizations. Let it penetrate your being. Allow time for it to gestate and grow. The poet Rilke said, "You must give birth to your images. They are the future waiting to be born. Fear not the strangeness you feel. The future must enter you long before it happens. Just wait for the birth, for the hour of new clarity." We are living in times of uncertainty when everything is giving way under our feet. We are anxious about our economic futures. We are anxious about our safety and the threat of global terrorism and the environment and the loss of compassion for those who are weak or old. Dream groups foster hope. In an anxious and changing world, dream work taps into the things that are ancient and unchanging, eternal in their substance and truth. We need to be in each other's presence, to sit in circles and listen to each other, to know each other and to be known, to see how we are ultimately all alike in our needs and frailties, and ultimately how we are each so uniquely beautiful. We are more than the events of our lives, more than our roles or resumes. A dream group that has become a circle of trust will witness the emergence of a larger story. The more attuned you are to your depths, the more you will live a life that is illuminated from within, and the less you will fear the unknown or have to defend your life. You will not need to reference what the questionable and ever-shifting authorities are telling you. You will begin to make different choices about your life, sourced from the depths of your being, rather than from the values promoted by the dominant culture. I would like to close with a Hopi wisdom poem that inspired me for years. Many of you know it. It is no more true than now. Gather your community, be good to each other, and do not look outside yourself for the leader. There is a river flowing now, very fast. It is so great and swift that there are those who will be afraid. They will try to hold on to the shore. They will feel that they are being torn apart, and they will suffer greatly. Know the river has its destination. The elders say we must let go of the shore, push off into the middle of the river, keep our eyes open and our heads above the water. See who is there with you and celebrate. At this time in history, we are to take nothing personally, least of all ourselves. For the moment that we do, our spiritual growth and journey come to a halt. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your attitude and your vocabulary. All that we do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. We are the ones we've been waiting for. When you do dream work, you are walking the moonlit path. It is a path lit by wisdom, intuitive wisdom, wisdom born of the soul.